My name is Chris Grum, and I have kind of two hats that I'm wearing this week while I'm at Holden. And one is that I'm the vice president of the ELCA, which is one of the reasons why I'm limited to 1 week here, because in about 2.5 weeks, the National Assembly for the church is going to be meeting. That's all right. In Chicago, so I had to have limited time up here, but I'm glad that I got this much time to spend. My second hat is that I'm the executive director of an organization called Education Program Associates, and I will give you a description of that, since there are very few people in the church who've ever been able to describe what I do. Not that it's such a mystery, but it's sometimes difficult to put these two jobs together. The agency that I run basically trains healthcare workers, primarily nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, to work in the field of women's healthcare. And what that means for those workers is they work in family planning clinics, in clinics that do prenatal care. They work in clinics that do infertility, counseling, referral, and testing. Anything that has to do with reproductive health. They deal with AIDS. So this week, all of the topics that I'm going to deal with are those topics that come up on a daily basis for the workers that we train throughout the year. I've spent about 20 years in this field and have watched the trends on all of the issues that I'm going to talk about, in particular the issue of abortion tonight. I was in the field prior to 1972, when abortion was illegal in many states, and have worked in it since the Roe v. Wade decision in 1972. We're going to talk about that a little more. So that gives you a little bit of my background. What I want to do to get us started is I'm going to have you do something. You need to do it very quickly, but I'm going to require that you actually get up. And for those of you who are up there, when we do this exercise, you can just stay up there but move from one side to the other. I want to do an exercise, and this is an exercise. If you're not comfortable doing it, you can pass. There's no problem. It's called forced choice. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you two choices, and those are the only two choices in the world. There's no other choice, and there's no, can't we do this, and what about this? This is the bottom line. It's it. And what I'm going to suggest is one choice of people go stand in this side of the room, and the other choice of people go stand in that side of the room. And I need you to do that very quickly. You can have your chairs back, so don't feel like you're going to lose them along the way. I know there's a lot of possessiveness around which chair you're sitting in and where it exactly is positioned. So, first, these are the two choices that you have. There are only two cars made in the country. There are only two. You have two choices. You have to buy a car, and you have two choices. And on this side, your choice is a Cadillac. That's what you have on this side. One of the newer ones, kind of sleek, but a little compact. On this side, you have a Volkswagen Rabbit. These are your two choices. So move real quickly to which end of the room you're going to be. Yeah, any color you want. All right. Okay. Real quickly, some reasons why people chose the Cadillac, people over here. What are some of the reasons you chose a Cadillac?
I own a rabbit for my summer
hit. You own a rabbit and you know. I used to own a rabbit. Okay. You had a rabbit in the engine blue. Okay. American-made car.
I like it comfortable.
Comfort. It's easy to ride in. It's comfortable.
Prestige. Huh? Generally dependable.
Generally, prestige is another. Dependability, prestige. Safe. Has safety. Anything else that hasn't been mentioned?
It's white.
It's what?
It's white.
Oh, it's white. Yeah, I gave you your option of color. You can have it. It does come in colors. Yeah, if you live in the ghetto, that's what you got to have. That's right. That's your mark with the neighborhood.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. What?
It's got a bigger engine that's going to last twice as long as a Volkswagen.
Okay. So last longer. It'll be more economical in the end because it's going to last longer. I will bet you the issue of economy also comes up on this side. It's going to be interesting, isn't it? What about over here? Rabbits. What was the... So economical, right?
Lower maintenance.
Lower maintenance. It's cute. So you kind of like the image. Now, wasn't there somebody over here that also liked the image? Wasn't there a person who was into the prestige?
So there's a,
It what?
Pollutes less.
So here we have a good, environmentalist. Easier to find a parking place. If you live in San Francisco, dump the Cadillac.
Cheaper.
Who said cheaper? Up here. Cheaper? Okay, so economical. Although, I tell you, this person over here says it's...
No, cheaper to buy.
Yes, but this person over here basically says you won't... You'll regret that decision. Because you'll have to buy two rabbits for one Cadillac.
You can't.
All right. What else? What are some of the other reasons?
Reliable.
Okay, so... It's a faster... Again, we're talking image, right? Do you have a different... Fun, more fun to drive. Okay. All right. What I want you to do, you need to listen to me right now. What I want you to do is think about what each one of you said, that there were similar reasons, but people made radically different choices for the same reason. And that's one of the things that happens in ethical dilemmas. And there are a lot of different values that people have. For instance, over here, one of your values is that you kind of want to look cool in that little rabbit, and the Cadillac's going to make you look like a dork, right? So, oh, speed. You're a speed. Okay. But there was someone over here, image. Whereas the prestige person over here, there was some value related to that. So when we make decisions that we're forced into, a lot of our values and the way we choose to live our life, our experiences, play a large part in making those decisions. And that oftentimes people make the same decision for very different reasons or two totally different decisions for the same reason. And that's one of the things that we have to be open to as we talk about this issue. Okay, I have one more for you. This is tougher. I kind of start out with an easy one. Now we really require you to think. And one of the things I want to say to you before we finish is this session is designed for people to share their beliefs and feelings and to respect what others have to say. So you should not feel inclined to have a particular viewpoint. Soon I'll get you in the game. And if you feel like you want to pass, that is acceptable also. All I do ask you to do, though, is listen carefully to your neighbor as they share their particular feelings about this issue. So this is what it is. On this side, abortion is not available to anyone for any reason, including the life of the mother. And on this side, abortion is available to anybody, regardless of the reasons. Those are your two choices. Do a quick decision. If you get caught in the wrong place, that's okay, but do a quick decision. On this side, abortion is not available for any reason. On this side, it's available for any reason up to 9 months. I forgot that piece. You can't stand with me. No. Yes. Right. There are no restrictions on it. Okay, is everybody kind of where they think they might be? All right, let's listen very carefully to what people are saying. Let's start out with this group first. Yes?
It's faster, sportier.
No.
New thing. Get that man his rabbit. Okay, what were some of the reasons?
There aren't enough children.
What?
There aren't enough children.
There aren't enough children in the world. So you think that abortion should not be available to allow... Okay, so there are a lot of parents out there who want to adopt, not enough kids to be adopted.
There are not unwanted children, there's unwanted pregnancies, but not unwanted children.
Okay, so you would distinguish between those two things. Other issues that
when
you're...
When it got down to 9 months over there versus life over here, it seems like it was life versus life very directly. And so I considered that more cases that abortion is not necessary or it does not endanger. So I went over here.
Okay, so for you, there was a point at which you kind of made the decision. And for you, it was the length of time right. that the abortion was available. That was an issue for you, yes?
9 months, you can take a healthy baby, I think, at 8 months and do a cesarean and pop it out. It'll live just fine.
Okay.
That's a big break point for me.
All right, so for you, again, there was a point at which you made that decision. Anything? Any other reasons on this side? that you want to lay out?
Psalm 139. I knew you in your mother's womb, so if the baby was that important to God, then I would.
Okay, so for you, that has a direct impact in terms of your understanding of your faith. All right, good, thank you. On this side, what were some of the reasons you chose to be on this side? Yes?
Can't legislate morality.
Can't legislate morality, okay. Other reasons?
Life of the mother.
The life of the, so for you, the one of the key points was the life of the mother. In other words, if I had said over here that you could have abortion for the life of the mother and other circumstances, you would move over there. Okay, so again, you two had points at which you made a decision to move over. And you weren't, it wasn't that totally was were opposed, but you had points at which you made that choice. Okay, other people? Yes?
Unwanted and abused.
So that abortion should be available if somebody chooses that they don't want their pregnancy, okay? Other issues over here? Yes?
If the state can tell you that you can't have an abortion, the state can tell you you must have an abortion. So I don't think it's the state's...
Okay. So basically what you're saying is that the state ought to stay out of the business of telling you what to do with that particular pregnancy. All right? Yes?
Any of us over here can make the same decision as the people there.
Okay. And are you inferring that the opposite is not true?
Yeah. Well,
okay, but that's what it, so the point of the statement is to say you would choose to have the options available and would hope that people would make a responsible decision in the process. Okay? Other issues? Yes?
That we have that choice, but that there's also the possibility to set up counseling possibilities so that people know what they're doing when they do make decisions.
Okay.
Rather than just say, quick, quick, no trends.
Okay. Yes?
I didn't like the 9 months part either, but I had trouble deciding that there would be a point when the fetus has a soul as actually a person in there. I would be bothered, I guess, if the fetus began to have the beginning of some kind of consciousness and so that it would have that kind of image of God. However, at conception, it strikes me that the zygote is almost expendable in the whole economy of the world, whereas as adults or as children, we're very difficult to kill. You have to have something very unnatural like AIDS or a war, wrecking the environment, bad sanitation, no food, or we're very, very tough. But during the very early days of pregnancy where I'm trying to decide if there's somebody in there or not, perhaps 40% of the fertilized zygotes actually survive.
So for you, some of it is the uncertainty of what's going on in there.
Well, I think
that allows you to make that.
Regards life as cheap enough at that stage that I don't believe, I find it hard to believe that there is somebody in there.
Okay, so that's, and that certainly is one of the issues that we're going to be looking at, and certainly in the issue of abortion, it's one of the arguments and one of the kind of focal points that we've been on, which is that question of when does life begin, when does the soul, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's an excellent point, and thank you for that to stop us and move us back to our chairs, and then I want to talk a little bit about that, this process. One of the reasons, and we have a really brief period of time to talk about an issue that has taken volumes to discuss. This alone is the briefing papers that have come from the Supreme Court for their decision that they handed down about the 5th of July. This is just the beginning. I have at home probably 5 shelves of materials around the issue of abortion. So we're going to move through this pretty quickly. What I wanted to do in terms of this exercise is give you a little bit of an idea of the kind of ethical dilemmas that people find themselves in when they are dealing with the issue of abortion. And an ethical dilemma, just to give us kind of a place to start, I would define as the existence of a real choice between possible courses of action. And in taking the action and making a decision, we are placing a value on the action or the consequence. And decision-making in ethical dilemmas, we always take the action with some degree of uncertainty within the context of that decision. In other words, the only thing certain about making a decision regarding an ethical dilemma is that you're going to face uncertainty. There are always questions that are not going to be answered. And it's one of the difficult things for us, particularly as North Americans, because we like everything in a nice, neat box. And ethical dilemmas don't come in nice, neat boxes. So what we have a tendency to do is we have a tendency to ignore them. And we particularly oftentimes do that in the church because it's easier not to deal with it than it is to deal with it. Consequently, we oftentimes push people underground around this particular issue. And I think only now we're beginning to surface some of those things. There are also two other pieces that I just want to have, just keep in your mind. I'm going to give you a little information, kind of some statistics around the issue of abortion, and then I have three cases that I'm going to ask you to go through in small groups. We probably won't get through all three because this is a pretty talkative group, I can see. But we'll get through as many as we can. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about some of your feelings, some of your issues related to the question of abortion, but in the context of some very specific things. Because I think we need to be careful that we don't talk about abortion just as a theoretical issue. That it, in fact, impacts many, many people's lives, and we need to see it within that context. But there are four things, and I'm going to be dealing with these two areas in all of my talks I give this week. There are two areas. Can everybody see this? I think it's the... There are two pieces that I want you to keep in mind as you are making decisions in your small group. One is there are ethical concepts in medicine or healthcare. There are four major ones that are key to the issues we're talking about. One is informed consent. In other words, you are required to know what's happening to you, to know about the procedure before you have it. That is considered one of the most important pieces of ethical concepts in healthcare. Two, confidentiality. It's been a key issue in healthcare. The doctor's confidentiality in court cases has for years been revered. But Thursday, I'm going to talk about AIDS. That's radically changing. AIDS is radically changing the issue of confidentiality, and we need to look at that. Benefit-risk ratio. Whenever you get involved in some kind of health, some kind of medical procedure, you need to know the benefits and the risk and where they get weighed. That always becomes a difficult one. But it's important to understand both of those. And fourth, one that I think we pretend we believe in, and in fact our system doesn't do very well in, which is justice, equal treatment for all people. You know, we really do, that is a premise of our healthcare system in this country. I know it's hard to believe when you see what's going on, but it is a major premise of our healthcare system. So those are four kind of what I call societal ethical bases that we function within that are, by the way, going through a radical change in the area of reproductive health for a lot of reasons. Both. It's always been our belief, I mean, at one of the premises, kind of like, you know, the belief in the United States that there's justice and equality for all and within the U.S., and that's what we're based on as a government. That's the same thing that's true in terms of health care, that if you talk to public health people, if you talk to lawyers who are dealing with lawsuits, if you talk to physicians, that's a premise on which we think we've built our health care system. And you'll see it a lot. So it's not just out of physicians, but it's an understanding of how we designed our healthcare system. Okay, and we're going to have a whole session on that issue when we talk about healthcare rationing. And we can do some more talking about that. Within the Christian community, there are five basic principles that you also have to integrate with these that I've laid out to you. One is the importance of human life. That's certainly a key principle. Respect for others. Responsibility towards humanity and rest of creation, accountability to God, and freedom in the gospel. So within the context of making the kinds of decisions that we're talking about, I think one has to take into account both of these sides of the issue. Rarely do we do that in a formal way because most of us have never had that kind of those issues presented to us in that particular way. But as you do your case studies tonight, I'm going to kind of take you through those and show you where, in fact, you on a daily basis make decisions with these nine premises in mind. And sometimes you're aware of them and sometimes you're not. But I think we need to begin to highlight them and as a community and as a Christian community really struggle with what they mean and what those issues are to us. Okay, any questions related to that? We're going to talk some more specifically about that. The other thing I wanted to mention to you, under Christian convictions, you need to know that most of the Christian churches in this country hold these to be true in ethical decision making. However, you also need to know that they hold radically different positions about the issues that we're going to talk about this week, abortion being one of them, even though they all subscribe to all five of these. So remember the exercise on forced choice, where people had the same reasons with radically different decisions. So we need to be careful when we talk about everybody believes in this and everybody believes in that. It's really much more complicated than that. Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And in fact, when on Friday when we talk about rationing of health care, this is a key issue related to economics. Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. Okay. So let me give you a little bit of background in terms of abortion, and then I'm going to get you into your cases. Abortion can be traced back to 25 BC. It's been going on for a long time, and it's only until recently when the procedure was made safe for mothers that the debate over the issue became more pronounced. Because prior to that, women and fetuses or babies, depending upon what time it was, died in the act of abortion most often because of infection, etc. So prior to the safe procedure, many people in institutions opposed abortion because it was not healthy for the life of the mother. However, there were a group of people who did abortions for many years that some of you might not be aware of, and those were witches in the medieval times. In medieval times, witches were healers. And the two primary functions they had were abortion, and what do you think the other one was?
Healing.
Was healing, but what specifically?
Midwifery.
Midwifery was one, but contraception. Witches developed out of many herbal remedies contraception, much of that which has been lost today. And in fact, many witches burned at the stake because they did induced abortions for a lot of different reasons that are very complex, but the history is definitely there. Well, modern medicine has radically changed the issue. Do you have a specific question?
Well, I just want to know, what is a witch? Were they witches because they did what other people didn't do, or were they witches because they worshipped the moon or something?
Well, frankly, it was a mixed bag. There were those who were out worshiping the moon, etc., and there were those who were healers, and some of them were combined, and it included thousands and thousands of primarily women and some men. So it was a mixed bag,
so it's
basically.
Not necessarily saying that they were spiritually something funny about them. They might have just been...
Not at all. However, in recent medical times, something has radically changed, which is we now have a very safe medical procedure related to abortion, particularly in the first trimester. And I'm going to use those words a lot, first, second, and third trimester. And they're defined as first trimester is the first 3 months of pregnancy, second is the fourth through the 6th month, and the third is the seventh through the 9th month. So that's what we're talking about. The safe procedure and the ability to understand more about fetal development and save babies born prematurely have had a radical impact on our understanding of abortion today. Now, let me just give you some figures so you get a sense of the magnitude of the issue here. There are approximately 60 million abortions performed per year in the world. 30 million of those are probably due to contraceptive failure. 30 million, one half of those. 91% of those abortions are done in the first trimester, the first 3 months. 8% are done in the second trimester, and less than 1% are done in the third trimester. And for the most part, those that are done in the third trimester relate to the issue of the life of the mother. That's basically those statistics. Worldwide, one woman dies every 3 minutes from a botched abortion. 1.6 million abortions take place in this country every year. 46% of all the women who live in this country will at some time in their life have an abortion. 46%. Abortion rate is higher in countries where it is illegal than in countries where it is legal. Example, 1.6 million abortions happen in the United States every year with a population of 240 million. 3 million abortions happen every year in Brazil with a population of 144 million. And those statistics go right through from country to country. 115 countries have a higher abortion rate than the U.S. for a lot of different reasons. Currently, under the proper medical procedures, abortion is 10 times safer than childbirth. If you look at statistics and the number of women who die from abortions versus childbirth. Interestingly enough, what?
Is that America?
That's in the U.S., yes. I said safe procedure because in many cases you're talking about in other countries where abortion is not available in a safe medical procedure, a lot of botched abortions and infections related to that. Interestingly enough, in the United States, there, prior to abortion becoming legal, there was approximately the same number, a few more, they think, abortions. It hasn't radically changed since 1972 when Roe v. Wade, when the Supreme Court actually made abortion legal in all states. Some of the reason for that is because in some states prior to 1972, abortion was legal. You just had to go through a lot of stuff to actually have the abortion. In 1972, the Supreme Court said abortion should be legal in all states. Their reasoning for it, however, was very different than what most people understand. Their reasoning was right of privacy. It had nothing to do with the woman's right to have an abortion. It had to do with the issue of privacy. And women, and what the Supreme Court said very clearly is that women, this is a decision that basically is made between a woman and her physician. And that's it. That has impacted what the Supreme Court has done now, which we'll talk about a little later. The other issue that they dealt with was the question of viability. And basically what the Supreme Court said in 1972 was abortions can be performed, except for the saving of the life of the mother, up to 28 weeks. Because at that time in 72, that was where the viability issue, and the viability basically means that whether a fetus can survive outside of the mother's body. And 28 weeks was about it. That has gone down to about 23 to 24 weeks. In other words, there are now new technology in what we call neonatal medicine that actually is able to impact the saving of some, not a huge number, but some of those lives at that age. Most scientists and even neonatologists feel that that level of viability is not going to radically drop for a long time because there are certain things that are happening in terms of growth pattern, lung development that occur at that rate. So most people don't think that we're going to have another drop like we did from 28 to 24, from 24 to 20, that people feel that it will stay at that place. I want to talk a little later on possibly about the issue of the new technology in neonatology because I think there's some impacts with that. But the viability issue is definitely there. The other issue that I think I want to leave with you is you need to understand if there's anything you remember about this hour together is that rich and upper income women, middle class women, have always, always had abortion available to them as an option. Even when it was illegal. Because they had the option to go someplace place either in the world or to some state or convince some doctor to put something else in the chart. And abortion was available to them. So that when decisions are made in this country and in others, they primarily, while they make it inconvenient and maybe painful and hurtful for a lot of women, the women who are impacted the most are low-income women and teenagers. Those are the two groups. Those are the two groups where women die the most when abortion is illegal. Those are the two groups where there is the highest rate. And in the teen population, the highest rate is among black teens because you're combining the teen population with low income at the same time. I think it's something for us to remember. There are many reasons. There are many ethical reasons why people choose. And I just want to give you two that I think. Pro-choice people have oftentimes, pro-abortion people, pro-choice, whatever words you choose, have oftentimes stated two reasons. One is the Supreme Court reason. It's a privacy issue. Somebody said it over here. The government ought to stay out of our pregnancies. They don't have any business being in there, and they ought to be out of it. The second is a women's rights issue, that women have to be able to control their destiny in order to truly be equal and liberated within a society. That if women are not able to control their reproductive destiny, it radically impacts their ability to become mobile within a society. So you see, there are a lot of people even within the pro-abortion movement who have different reasons why they're there. The same is true for the people who are anti-abortion or what some people call pro-life. There are two reasons. One, for some, it's the protection of the fetus. That becomes the key issue. But for some, it's the control of women and their sexuality. That's the key issue. And abortion is only one piece of that. That there are many people who are involved in the anti-abortion movement who not only do not believe abortion should be available, they also do not believe contraception should be available for teenagers, for women who are not married, and that basically sex and intercourse is for procreation. You have sex, you should have a child. Though that's the role. And there is a fair number of people who fit into that category. And it's one of the things that happens when we get to yelling back and forth with each other around the abortion issue is we don't hear a lot of those underlying issues that are coming up. And we need to remember that they are also there. New developments that are going to impact our decision making. The lowering age of viability. I talked to you about that. The emergence of neonatal care. The ability to keep preemies or premature babies alive for a longer period of time. The use of what we call prenatal testing at about 16 weeks. There are a number of tests now that are available that can tell you, in some cases, whether the fetus has a genetic disorder, whether there's a disability, even mental retardation. So suddenly we're faced with all of our new technology around the question of, do we require to have perfect babies? Or is that, again, an individual decision? That is going to be an issue. In the state of California, for instance, there's a new law now that says that every woman who's pregnant has to have certain prenatal tests. That's going to radically impact the decision-making process. It's a whole lot different to know that there is a disability within your pregnancy than to deal with it upon birth, because there are different options available to you. So it's one of the issues that's going to come up. More knowledge about the fetus. We do. Every day we're gathering more knowledge about the fetus. The question of when life begins from the concept of a societal issue has not been answered, but we're certainly more information. The new Supreme Court ruling, and basically what the Supreme Court did this July is they did not strike down Roe v. Wade. Abortion is still legal. What they did is they handed it back to the states, and they said you can make restrictions on it. One of those restrictions is there'll be no public facilities available, no public employees can do perform abortions, and there are no public monies. Tell me who you think that impacts. Once again, the strategy gets pushed in that direction. On the other hand, people say, if it's such an issue, therefore, why don't we make abortion a privacy issue, then let people deal with it privately. Government money shouldn't be spent on it. So there are those two arguments. And the third piece is that they allowed for what we call, this is a Missouri case, viability testing at 20 weeks. which means that if a woman comes in for an abortion at 20 weeks, that somehow a physician is supposed to do a viability test. Well, first of all, there is no viability test. And so that's one of the problems related to it. So it'll be interesting. The bottom line is, what's happening to Roe versus Wade is that the discussion and the fight is now taking place state by state. And your state, you need to watch and see what your state is doing with it, because each state has a different set of regulations. Anybody here from Florida?
We have 20 minutes left.
Okay.
Jeez.
Florida, the governor of Florida just called a special session of the legislature to put in new regulations for abortion. So there are a lot of things that are occurring with that, and I think we need to look at those. Okay, what I would like to do is have you look, there's one other thing that's happening. The abortion pill, RU486. There's a new pill developed by a pharmaceutical company in France that if taken 10 days after your missed period, chances are, for in most cases, what will happen is you will slough off the pregnancy, you will have like a period, and you will have terminated the pregnancy. If that is currently illegal in this country, if that comes onto the market, that's going to radically change what happens with abortion, because 90% of the abortions will be dealt with that pill, and that becomes a very different issue than a surgical procedure. So that's going to have an impact on it.
Is it illegal on medical grounds or on abortion?
Well, it's just not, the FDA just hasn't approved it to be in this country. And a lot of that is because of lobbying taking place by pro-life people. It actually has many other uses, but it's the abortion issue. And in France, it's legal, was made illegal for the time and then came back on the market. Frankly, however, I will tell you, just knowing the field and being as long as I have been in it, if the pill becomes available, it'll get into this country. There's no question. I mean, it's hard to keep that kind of small item out of the country.
Legally or illegally?
Illegally. Yeah, and eventually they're going to have to deal with the legality. But I'm just saying illegally, that's what's going to occur. Okay, there are a number of issues, ethical dilemmas. Women's right to accept or reject medical treatment, the rights of the fetus, the care and rights of children in our society who, if you don't allow abortion, the focus on producing only perfect children, which I talked about, the linkage between sexual intercourse and procreation, you know, is that in fact what we accept within our society or within the church? The interpretation of God's creation. What does abortion have to do with our understanding of God's creation? And a number of other issues that come up, but those are some of the ones to highlight and look at. What I want to do is I would like to give you a case that I want you in small groups of about 4 or 5, and you can do it right where you're sitting. I'd like you to look at and do just, 5 or 6 minutes of some kind of discussion, how you think. I'm going to give you some questions to look at, and this is the case. All of these cases, by the way, are situations that are real. You've seen them over. Those of us in the field have seen them over and over again, time and time again. Mary's a divorced mother of 2 children. She's self-supporting, but her income is irregular. You need to listen carefully. She has no health insurance, and she was raped by her ex-husband and has just discovered she's pregnant. She wants an abortion because she feels she cannot support another child and doesn't want to have a child from the incident. She's afraid to report the rape because her husband will find out about the pregnancy and want custody of the child. He currently has custody of their 2 children at this point, because in the divorce she was accused of adultery and the courts gave custody of the 2 children to the husband. Her response to the rape, interestingly enough, is less anger and more horror. So for her, the issue is she wants to have an abortion so she can get out of it, not deal with it anymore, not deal with her husband. So the questions I'd like you to answer within your group is, should Mary have access to legal abortion? Should the state pay for that abortion? Should the government pay for that abortion? And the third one is, if she was a typical member of your parish and she shared that story with your parish, how would they respond to her particular situation? Okay? Can you get in small groups, 4 or 5 of you, if you can do it without people that you don't know, but if that's the only one around? And I'll give you just about 5 or 6 minutes. Don't anyone dominate the crowd. Let, you know, share with each other. It's a time to listen. The three questions I asked are, should Mary have access to abortion, should the government pay for it, and what if she were a member of your parish, how would they deal with it if they knew her story? Okay, I don't want to stop your conversation, but I need to move you back together in a group. You don't have to move your chairs real, you know, except to turn yourself around. I would hope this kind of conversation would kind of continue. I'm going to give you every day as people come in for a variety of different these topics, some case studies to really think about. Because, again, I think it's much easier for us to make pronouncements either side of this issue without ever considering the people involved. And we need to always think about the person involved. What were some of the discussions that took place in your group? Should Mary have access to abortion?
Yes. Yes.
Was that, did people generally feel that no, that there in within your group there was some feeling that no, that even in that case abortion should not be made available? Okay, other response from groups? Yes. Sure, in this particular case, and it's a very specific case, she did not choose to be in this situation, so the use of birth control was not a key factor for her. In other cases it certainly is, and certainly one of the issues to deal with is, are we as a society, if we don't want abortion, are we willing to put money into family planning education? So far, we have said no to that as a society. We're not doing that. There's not a lot of money going into that. So, but in this case, we're talking about somebody who didn't have a choice, so birth control wasn't a key issue there. Other comments about this situation? Yes?
I think our group really felt that it was terrible that this woman had absolutely no choice about the matter, about being pregnant, and so we were very much heavily leaning towards that she should have the abortion, but with the, if it is a life, if you know, then does the baby become the second victim of the rape? Because the father, the baby occurred through the father's raping action, and that caused the mother to reject the baby. If the baby is a living life, then the baby becomes the second victim. But we weren't certain about that.
Okay. Certainly that's a question within the whole range of things. And one of the issues that we're dealing with as a society is whose rights are whose. One of the things that actually didn't get up here. I'm sorry, it's a major key issue, which is that everybody has a right to refuse medical treatment. That's a fifth one here that I, just as I was looking at it, didn't see. That's a key one. Pregnancy is the only situation in our entire culture around healthcare where we choose to tell somebody what they can or can't do with their body. It's the only one. That's that basically. Not an adult. An adult has a choice. An adult always has a choice. The only situation that you're seeing there are oftentimes with children, adults making decisions about children. But in terms of an adult, it's, you know, the one major framework. I mean, we deal with it around the issue of life support systems. But in terms of a particular disease, so you need to look at it within that light. But
yeah,
I think that's an issue.
In the context where there are two bodies connected together.
Yeah. But you're still dealing with that of the woman, so that you need to look at that. So those are definitely questions that I think are ones that need to surface. What about the issue of if this woman was in your congregation, how would your congregation deal with it?
Supportive.
Supportive?
Emotionally.
Emotionally?
Silence.
Silence?
We felt that their congregations would be unlikely to talk about it, but in fact, individually, people would care.
Okay. But as a community, would might be uncomfortable dealing with it. Other people in your congregations, what do you think? People wouldn't deal with it?
I've not known very many women to even talk publicly about their abortion.
Right. And more specifically, women rarely do it within the context of the church. And what community should better be there regardless of what choice a woman makes, than that loving Christian community. And yet in many ways it becomes the last place that women will talk about these particular issues. That's one of the reasons why I thought it was really important to deal with this issue in terms of the context of a Christian community, because it's one of the things that we shy away from very frequently. Somebody had a hand up over here. Yeah.
We would shy even further away from any participation in a public discussion about how the state should provide such services. I think that would be even more difficult.
In terms of the state paying for the services, right. So, okay, how many people here thought that the state ought to pay for Mary's abortion? Okay, so it's about half and half. All right. What were some of the, those people who didn't feel the state should pay, what were some of your reasons? Yes.
I think the state
should. So you think the state ought to say, we support having children, not having an abortion, therefore we're going to put our money where our mouth is in terms of doing that.
Okay.
Right. But this is a husband that she can't tell because he's going to force her into having the baby and taking the baby away.
Huh? It was an opinion.
Yeah.
So,
I mean.
The reason why he ought to be told.
Right. Okay. But that's her. That's one of her struggles that she deals with. And I think that's probably true. I think that's a good point, because I think what happens is there are other people who are responsible, but many women who find themselves in this position oftentimes are unable to deal with those other people for a variety of different reasons. So once again, those people who have money can afford the procedure, and those who don't cannot. And it becomes a problem within our society when we take a particular medical procedure, one of the very few, and we decide whether we're going to pay for it or not, even though we pay for everything else. Yes?
In this situation, whether it's a pregnancy caused by an illegal act, and I think rape is illegal in every state, probably?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If she were to have a public defender and brought this to light, would the state intercede in that situation because it's an illegal act in that state?
Well, it would have to go through court. And frankly, for somebody like that to go through court, by the time he took it to court, the pregnancy would probably be far beyond what she had, and the mental anguish for her of taking it to court, etc. So it's possible, yes, but not necessarily.
If it is an illegal act, would he get custody of that child if he is a known rapist?
It depends upon, it's very difficult in most courts to get convictions against ex-husbands on the issue of rape. So it would be a long process. The point here is, yes, you're right, if you carried it to the kind of a logical conclusion, for her, she didn't see herself as having that option. See, again, we need to continually put ourselves in the shoes of the person who's there. We might choose it, but for her, that's where she saw her option. So we need to think about that. Maybe a congregation could have supported her to say, go and bring charges against your husband. Maybe that would have been one of the ways to support her. Okay, I'm going to take one other quick comment, and then we have to.
I was going to make
the tape's going to end.
I think we need to, as a congregation, as a counselor, explore the options open to her, including those of relationship to her husband. And what was this? Sometimes a person in the situation sees this as their only option, but there are others available to her that mm-hmm. she needs to have some help exploring it.
Right. However, I need to say that one of the issues and reasons why oftentimes women remain silent is because they feel like they are not, their judgment hasn't been trusted in it. So one, in I think you're right, that in a loving community you share those options, but we need to be very careful that we also respect the person's decision-making process in terms of what they feel. That's the tension and the struggle oftentimes. And that's one of the issues that I think we have to deal with. Yes?
Because abortion is a medical procedure, I see a real problem here with splitting hairs about whether it was voluntary or involuntary pregnancy. The reason is this. You can have a voluntary cancer by smoking. You can have an involuntary cancer by working in an asbestos mine before they found that asbestos was dangerous. Those two are covered by state funds. I see no difference in funding abortion if it's a decision that's a legal decision on the part of the woman and their doctor to have an abortion. It should be funded either through insurance, and in this case she has no insurance, then by the state. So I don't see why they split hairs on the involuntary or voluntary pregnancy. The abortion should be funded by the state if it's legal.
So you see abortion in the same way as you do any other medical procedure.
That's right. I'm a physician, and I agree with the confidentiality issue.
Okay. And but there's certainly a lot of people who feel it's a morality issue, and they don't want their tax dollars going there. Yes?
It appears to me that the choice is open to a woman at the time that there is an unwanted pregnancy. None of them feels good. And I think that what I'm hearing a lot of is that there are choices to be made, and some of them are really good choices. I don't see any choice that a woman has to make, a teenager or whatever, at that particular time that feels good.
Some people describe abortion in some ways as a necessary evil, that in the midst of decision-making, that becomes one of the decisions that you may or may not choose to make. I'm going to leave you with a case that I want you to think about. I think this is only the beginning of a discussion, and I would hope that within your parishes, abortion is probably one of the hottest topics in this country today, and it needs to become the same kind of topic issue in the church. We need to begin to deal with it on a way that we're having conversations about it, in a way that people can feel safe sharing their opinion. But remember, in the process of sharing that opinion, that there are always probably going to be people in the room who've experienced some of that. So we always have to listen to people with a lot of care, concern, and kindness. We also have to deal with the issues, these kind of ethical issues, more than just beyond the issue of abortion. What is the long-term issue that we're facing in terms of limiting or not limiting abortion within the context of our society? What kind of society do we want to have in the year 2000? And how does the question and the issue of abortion impact that in terms of what we see our future society looking like? Those are some of the questions we need to look at. So let me finish by reading this last case to you, and then we will stop, and you can move on to your other activities. This is Cheryl, who's 14 years old. She's been sexually abused by her father, has been sexually active with her boyfriend since age 12. She's currently going with a guy who's 16, and she's just learned that she's pregnant. She will not tell her parents about the pregnancy because she fears what her father will do to her. She's determined to get an abortion and will resort to any means necessary. She's unwilling to go to the authorities about the sexual abuse because she doesn't want to be separated from her family, in particular her younger sister, who she's concerned about is going to be abused also. And basically, the boyfriend is unwilling to participate, marry her, support her, etc. The questions here to look at is this a teenager who should have and needs to have the consent of their parent to have the abortion? Should abortion be legal and safe for that teenager? And the final question is, if this family were an active, supportive member of your congregation, how would they deal with this story if it was told? And who would they believe? And with that, we will end.